Okay, here we go. Now I'm going to read you a prose piece. I've been writing short prose pieces, and this one's called The Magic Tricks. It comes from a book of mine that's out in May. The Magic Tricks. My brother pulled a penny from his ear when I was 6 years old. I was five and learning to tie my shoes because my mom said it was now or never, seeing that I was already finished with an unruly year of kindergarten, where I had managed to learn the primary colors but little else. Mom was tired of me getting my shoelaces caught in the spokes of my tricycle, tired of having to wipe her hands on her apron and trudge down the steps to set me free. My brother Rick said, "Watch this," and a bottle cap that I recognized from my collection then appeared from his nose. I touched his nose softly, amazed that my brother could do something other than beat me up. When he coughed and a dry apricot rested in his palm, I looked into his mouth. When he scratched his hair and a twig fell out, I smoothed his hair. "How did you do that?" I asked. I coughed a dry cough three times, but only the sour smell of just-eaten pickles issued from my mouth. I scratched my hair, and an oily film waxed my fingertips. "Magic," he said, and turned away. I followed him as he walked up the alley, begging to know, my shoelaces dragging in the dust, the tongues of my tennis shoes lapping up foxtails and sticker plants. "Come on, Rick," I begged. "Just teach me the bottle cap magic trick." He told me to go away, that he and Arnold Molina, a neighbor kid whose arm was palsied from traveling both ways in the wringer washer, they were going to practice dangerous animal magic. He didn't want me to see. He said it was magic that sometimes leaped back on people, turning them into cats or dogs. "You're lying," I snickered. I was getting used to my brother tricking me, saying things like, "Captain Kangaroo lives across the street from us." "And that Funicello is a fifth grader at our school." "And you can die three times before you're really dead." I returned home to sit in the shade of the back porch with my sister. I practiced loop, bow, tug, but the laces, black from dragging in the dirt, kept getting knotted until they looked like my kindergarten scribbling. My sister Deborah, with small fingernail polished hands, helped me untangle them and wrap the long laces around my naked ankles. I walked around the yard thinking that maybe this was another way of tying shoelaces, and perhaps Mother would be satisfied when she came home from work. I had 2 days to learn to tie my shoes, or she was going to take them away. I was feeling good about learning to tie my shoelaces when Rick came back into the yard. He looked at us strangely, his eyes bugged out so the whites showed. He said, "A car ran me over and used up one of my lives. I have two more." "Rick, why don't you cough and show Deborah the apricot pit trick?" I asked. "And you didn't die." "I did." "You didn't." "I did." "You didn't," I argued, remembering that the man across the street from us was a plumber, not Captain Kangaroo, and Annette Funicello was just a picture cut from a magazine and tacked on the fifth grade bulletin board. Rick coughed and a rubber ball rolled from his mouth, the kind used in a game of jacks. He sneezed and a jack fell from his nose. He rubbed his eyes with his fists and two marbles gleamed at us. I turned to my sister Deborah. "This is magic." Rick quivered his outstretched fingers at my shoelaces and said, "I predict they'll come untied." I took a few steps, and, sure enough, they tumbled from my ankles. I was proud that my brother knew magic and trusted him when he said, "Let's burn down the house." We had started playing with matches, progressing slowly from burning gum wrappers to milk cartons. Bored with these small-time fires, we decided to go all the way now that we had Rick's magic to save us. I stuffed newspapers in the corners of the living room and lit them with a tiny light of a match. We stood back, watching the flames leap waist high into the air. Deborah clapped, and I leaped to the rhythm of the flames. We were so happy that when Rick returned from the sun porch with a crate of cherry tomatoes, I had no qualms about having a war inside the house. "You missed, you crowd," I shouted to Rick as I rolled from behind the couch to the stuffed chair. I looked over the chair, dodging the tomato bullets. Finding one splattered my T-shirt, and I feigned death, then rose again. "You dirty coward, I have two more lives." And then the blood of tomatoes stained the walls, dripping seeds that reminded me of my sister's baby teeth. Pete, our yellow canary, beat its head against the bars of its rusty cage, terrified. The fire burned down the ashes that floated in the air. We were happily exhausted, and Deborah fell asleep on the couch, and I dozed in the bedroom, only to wake to Rick's screaming that it was my fault. Mother was home, and the first thing that leaped to my mind that might save us from the biggest butt-whipping since the beginning of the world was magic. I looked in the kitchen. The air is still dark with floating ash. I wanted to tell my mom about how Rick could sneeze bottle caps, but I decided she wouldn't listen. Snot ran from Rick's nose as he cried. A lump of hair stood up on his head from being yanked. Mom looked with eyes of fire at me and said, and I said sheepishly, "Mom, I can tie my shoes now." I hurried to the bedroom for my shoes, sobs choking my throat like a whole loaf of bread. I was wrapping the laces around my ankles when, by magic, I dodged my mother's belt and scrambled out the window with only two of my lives gone. We were bad. That's a true story, too. We're burning down the house.